to Human Rights Unscripted, a podcast from the American University Washington College of Law that takes a deep dive into the human rights field through candid interviews with professionals, professors, and students. My name is Sydney Larson, and I'm here with my co-producer, Abigail Rosenthal. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you enjoy this episode of Human Rights Unscripted. Today, we are joined by Dr. Arturo Castellanos. He is a policy and advocacy associate at the National Immigration Forum and is a legal scholar specialized in international human rights and migration. In 2020, he became the first Mexican to graduate as a doctor of the science of law from Cornell Law School after defending his dissertation titled The Right of Suffrage of Xhosix Non-Citizens in the United States. Prior to joining the forum in April 2021, Arturo gained experience in the field of human rights and migration, working as a visiting scholar at American University's Academy on Human Rights and Humanitarian Law, as a legal fellow at Cornell's Gender and Justice Clinic, and as a drug policy consultant at the Organization of American States. Besides the JSD, Arturo holds a Master of Laws from Cornell Law School and a Bachelor of Laws from Escuela Libre de Derecho. Thank you so much for joining us today, and welcome to Human Rights Unscripted. It's great to have you.
Thank you very much, Sydney.
As we mentioned, your dissertation was on the right to vote for Xhosix in the United States. Could you tell us what that term means?
So when Donald Trump was elected and he was referring to my compatriots as rapists, as criminals, I felt sad, I felt frustrated, I wanted to do something about it. And at that time, I was doing my Master of Laws at Cornell, and I decided that I wanted to become more politically active in the United States. I wanted to participate in the next elections, if possible. In order to do that, I had to develop a legal philosophical theory about the right to vote as a non-citizen in the United States. So going back to your question, where does the term Xhosix come from? When I started writing my dissertation about why residents of the United States who are not American citizens should have the right to vote in this country, I felt very uneasy with the terms that we generally use to describe this group of people. And before I go on, I guess it's important for me to say that I am an alien, right? I'm not from another galaxy, not from another solar system. I am from Mexico. I'm from the southern border. But according to American laws, those of us who are not American citizens or nationals are labeled as aliens. And for me and for many others, the term alien is a demoralizing term. It talks about people who are not from this planet. And even the term alien is an adjective and a noun that describes someone who is not from a specific place. And there are many Xhosix who, even though they don't have a passport, an American passport, they belong to the place where they reside, right? They've been living there for in this country and in many towns and villages across the country for many, many years. So that's why I wasn't happy with the term alien. The other popular term is immigrants. And the term immigrant is not incorrect, but it is not precise either. Because first generation Americans are also immigrants. Even though they are citizens, they can vote now. It was not precise to talk about this specific group of people as immigrants, right? Other term was expatriates, expat. Unfortunately, the word expat has become a bourgeois term to refer to a specific group of people. When you browse on Google Images the word expat, you find people with money, dressed to the nines, living the life, living abroad. When you search in that same browser the word immigrant or alien, you don't see that kind of people. So I didn't feel comfortable using that term either. And particularly because that term refers to someone who is from a different country. And even though the nationality and citizenship of a person may be essential, an essential qualification to vote in certain jurisdictions, electoral jurisdictions, nationality shouldn't matter when you vote at the district level, at the village level, when you vote for your town representatives, at the county level. And the term non-citizen, for instance, non-citizens, the prefix non, not only perpetuates a negative connotation and it is confusing, it also talks about the citizenship of a person when it's not necessarily an essential qualification, in my opinion, to vote in local elections. So that's why I decided that talking about this group of people with the terms that we were using was not helpful. So that's why I came up with the term showsick. It's a term that I coined that comes from the Latin suffragio et honorum sine civitas, which in English could be translated as the right to vote and hold office without citizenship. So that's what showsicks are all about.
You said that nationality should not necessarily be a criteria for voting at perhaps the regional or the state level or even the municipal level. What qualifications do you think someone should have to be able to vote in those types of elections?
The answer for that question is the answer that is always right in law school, and that's it depends, right? It depends on a number of issues. Here in the United States presents a very interesting and unique possibility because the electoral jurisdictions are divided into seven different tiers or levels. The United States is a country where citizens or people can vote at the district level. You can vote in the village, you can vote in town, city, county, state, and at the federal level. So what I proposed in my dissertation was a proportionality test, a reasonability test. So depending on the connections that showsick can demonstrate in the place where they reside, they should be allowed to vote. And I used the same point system used to obtain a driver's license in the state of New York. So depending on whether you have a bank account, whether you are a U.S. veteran, whether you are studying in a U.S. university, it's an endless list where if you add a specific number of points, you should be able to vote for the village officials, for the district officials, town officials, city officials, state officials, and so on. So it depends. It depends. The important thing is to demonstrate that a person who resides in this country has the sufficient connections to the place where they live.
What is the importance of the right to vote? And do you view that as a human right?
Definitely. It is my impression that the right to vote is a twofold human right. It is a human right per se, enshrined in multiple treaties to which the United States is a state party, ICCPR, the American Declaration, Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So it is enshrined as an individual right per se. But it is also a manifestation of the right to freedom of expression, right? It's the way through which a society voices their concerns. And the fundamental reason for worrying about the democratic exclusion of showsicks in the United States and the democratic deficit that it creates, in my opinion, is that those who are not able to voice their concerns are not as successful as citizens in attracting the attention of public officials, right? Sheriffs, school boards, presidents, legislators. So showsicks tend to end up with lower level of public services and many other services provided by the state. So that's why it is one of the most important human rights, particularly in a country like the United States, where democracy and the right of suffrage are essential pillars of this country.
And if the right to vote is a human right, how can the United States justify derogation from that right? How can they justify not allowing people under its jurisdiction to vote?
if the United States or any other jurisdiction wants to derogate a human right like the right to vote, they must demonstrate that that derogation or hindrance is legitimate, proportionate, and necessary for a goal. And the United States has never proved that regarding the exclusion of political rights of Shoshis in this country. So there are many alternatives for all of us who want to advance the political rights of Shoshis in this country. We can do it through legislative advocacy, changing the legislation, changing whether it is the Constitution of the United States, the state's constitutions, municipal charters, even local bylaws. We can also take these to the courts, right? Whether they're national or international. If we take these to national courts, that's how many that's how lawyers have expanded the boundaries of suffrage qualifications throughout history since 1776, allowing women, people under 21, African Americans to participate in elections. So we can do it through national courts. We can also do it taking and advancing this issue through international bodies. We can file an individual communication before the Inter-American Commission of Human Rights. Or also, any country could demand before the International Court of Justice the violation of the political rights of Shoshis in the United States. And also, of course, there are the traditional advocacy measures. We can participate in demonstrations, organize podcasts like this, which are helping to expand the knowledge of this important thing. Because sometimes when I talk about the right of suffrage of Shoshis in the United States, people think it's an interesting idea, but perhaps too far-fetched or absurd. But I think we have to start thinking. We must start having a 22nd century mentality. We see the patterns of migration all over the world. And in the United States, 23 million people are Shoshis. That means around 7% of the population. And denying the right of suffrage to 7% of the population of a country is simply too much. I'm not saying that we should allow every Shoshik to vote in all elections. As I said, it depends. But I think it's important to start having this conversation now and to give the right, or recognize the right of suffrage to the millions of Shoshiks living in this country.
And as you said, Shoshis make up a huge portion of the population in the United States, and it might seem to us that taking away from their right to vote is absolutely absurd, but what are some of the justifications that people give for, like, going against that right?
There are multiple, and instead of going through the multiple nativist arguments that people do, I would like to explain the reasons why we should give them the right to vote. This is people who talk about, who contribute to the culture, gastronomy, religion of the United States, who are paying taxes here, who are paying rent, who are buying American products and services, who are essential to the United States national security, bringing the food to Americans' tables. These people, some of them can serve in the American Armed Forces. In certain jurisdictions, they can serve as first responders. Some of us, are parents or spouses of American citizens. So it is only natural that Shoshis should be allowed to vote in this country. Just imagine, for instance, if I had an American kid going to an American school, and he or she is an American citizen, why shouldn't I, as the legal guardian of that kid, be allowed to vote in the school board elections, right? And not only vote, but participate and hold office and be an active member of that community. So there are many, many arguments why Shoshis should be granted the right of suffrage in the United States.
Absolutely. Is there anything in our Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, that actually prohibits Shoshis from voting in the United States?
Interestingly, no. we have always interpreted the Constitution, the state's Constitution, as allowing only American citizens to participate in elections. The United States is a country very interesting because it depends on each state to grant suffrage qualifications to each individuals to participate in the elections. And none of them exclude show six from the elections. But courts and lawyers and advocates have long understood that the right of suffrage has to be reserved exclusively for American citizens. But that is not the case. There are only two states' constitutions in the United States. I think it's Arkansas and North Dakota. I have to confirm that. That explicitly say that only U.S. citizens can participate in elections. So I think there is a good case to bring this to national courts and advocate for the right of suffrage, because there are no constitutions in this country denying the right to vote to show six.
And it wasn't always that way, right? A lot of states in the past, right from when the country was founded, they let people that weren't citizens vote as long as they promised to become citizens. Is that right?
Yes, that's fascinating. When people think of citizenship, they immediately think about the right to vote in this country. But the truth is, for the longest part of the history of the United States, immigrants have been allowed to vote. That was a right reserved exclusively for white European men. The last time that immigrants were allowed to vote in this country, it was 1928. And most people don't think that. And there's a second wave where we started re-enfranchising show six, and that happened in the great state of Maryland, where there are 11 municipal corporations spearheaded by Tacoma Park that started allowing show six to vote and hold office in local elections. So that is pretty exciting, and it's been working great for the last almost 20 years.
Great. Do you happen to live in Tacoma Park?
I don't. I live in Chevy Chase, which is also a jurisdiction that allows show six to vote. Unfortunately, that's a jurisdiction that does not allow show six to run for office. In order to run for office in Chevy Chase, one has to be allowed to vote at the county level, mm-hmm. which is not the case in Montgomery County. But I encourage my show six friends in Tacoma Park and many other jurisdictions to take full advantage of this right, because a lot of people fought hard to get it, and it's important for us to start demonstrating the relevance and pressure that we can play in local elections.
Absolutely. I actually read that in 2021, in July, a couple cities in Vermont actually extended the right to vote to non-citizens. Do you see this as a trend that might continue in other places?
That is so exciting. I didn't know about it, and I'm happy to hear. And I definitely see it as a trend that will evolve, not only in the United States, but internationally, as we see the patterns of migration becoming majorities in many, many countries. And hopefully we'll see this trend moving forward.
Absolutely. As we move forward, what do you see as some barriers that we'll have to overcome, and do you have any suggestions on how we could do that?
Wow, yes. There are many things to do in this field. I don't want to put the whole pressure on U.S. citizens. I can tell you, I'll start first with what we, Show Six, can do to demonstrate our value to this great country. First, I think we can continue demonstrating the relevance that we have to enrich the life of of the communities where we live, enriching the gastronomy, the culture, the religion, showing our American neighbors where we are from, how we pray, how we eat, how we dance. It's natural for some Americans to be afraid of what immigrants can bring to this country, because everyone is, we are all tribal in a way. And it's natural to not understand different cultures, languages, smells, flavors. So it's important for us show six to go out there and demonstrate that we want to be a part of this of the communities where we live. So instead of putting all the pressure on U.S. citizens and U.S. politicians, U.S. policymakers, I think it's important for us to unite and demonstrate what we can give to this country.
Are there any things, though, that we as U.S. citizens might be able to do to help speed that process along?
Well, hosting a podcast like this is incredible. We can start writing about it. We can start organizing demonstrations. It's important for us to go to town hall meetings. Well, for you as American citizens, to go to town hall meetings and to propose the inclusion of show six in their local elections, to change the bylaws, the municipal charters to allow us to vote. Those changes sometimes require a vote in which we cannot participate. So it's important to raise these issues at the local level. And hopefully one day we will grow from local elections to federal elections. It'll be exciting to see what happens. But yeah, there's a lot that American citizens can do to help the movement.
I'm just wondering if you think that your research could potentially have ramifications or be helpful to some of the movements for citizens who are disenfranchised in certain U.S. territories like Puerto Rico or even Washington, D.C.
Absolutely, and that would be fantastic. Let me tell you the difference between a show sick and an American national who is not American citizen, people who live in American territories like people from Puerto Rico. The difference is that they can vote in their local elections. So they're in a way represented by elected officials, even though they cannot participate in presidential elections. They do vote for the local representatives. So that's something that we cannot do here as show six in the United States. But the representation of people from territories like Puerto Rico or Guam or many other places is they do have a representative in Congress that has not, they don't have the power to vote, but they have a voice and they can create alliances in Congress. So wouldn't it be great to have a representative in Congress voicing the concerns of show six, perhaps without a voice as a first stage and see how it works. But yes, hopefully my dissertation will expand the right of suffrage of the people from all the U.S. territories and the District of Columbia as well.
I was also just curious, in the jurisdictions where show six are allowed to vote, is there a requirement to prove that they aren't eligible to vote somewhere else at the same time, either vote in their countries of origin or other states?
There are no requirements. One can vote in local elections here in Maryland, and also vote in the elections of their country of origin. So if I participate in the local elections of Chevy Chase, I could also participate in the elections of in Mexico. In order to vote in the local jurisdictions of Maryland, you have to reside in that jurisdiction. So, yeah, but you can participate in international elections.
All right. Finally, just what is one thing that you want our listeners to take away from this conversation that we've had today?
Never take for granted the right to vote and to hold office, because it is a right for which so many people, men and women, have fought in the past. So it's important to exercise that right in every jurisdiction, in every possibility where you are allowed to vote. So voice your concerns through the ballot, participate, engage with your communities, and to my fellow show six listening to this podcast, get closer to your neighbors. Tell them who you are, where you come from, why you love this country so much, why you decided to come to this country. open up and let them see why you should be able to vote and hold office in the United States.
Thank you so much, Arturo. We really appreciate you joining us today. This has been another episode of Human Rights Unscripted.
Thank you all.
If you want to learn more about this issue, you can find Arturo's paper, The Right of Suffrage of Shosics in the United States, on the Cornell Library website.